So today, yeah, take a seat. So today, we'll discuss the theory large extra dimensions and derivatives of it. To explain the hierarchy problem. So supersymmetry, the idea behind supersymmetry is that there is a dynamical reason why you're not sensitive to UV corrections. Okay? So the hierarchy between M Planck and TEV, it's explained dynamically. Now, another way to explain dynamically is the following. What if the true cutoff of the theory was not M Planck? But it was TEV. Okay? So that's behind the crazy idea of large extra dimensions. So just to keep track, so we'll work with a signature where the spatial coordinates have a minus in front of them. Now the metric has the following form. Okay? So we have a theory where the space has 4 plus n dimensions. Okay? So this is the type of this is where how you can see the metric. So we will assume this formula here assumes that the extra dimensions are flat. Now, it doesn't have to be the case, and we'll come back to this. So the action in this case is given by the following: n plus 2. We have d4 n dx to the 4 plus n, and then we have the curvature. Okay, so that's the action for gravity. So r0 here is the size of the extra dimensions. So from this now, we have to derive the four-dimensional theory. Now, let me pause here and say that usually what this implies is that the picture that we have, such a metric, the picture that we have of the universe is something that looks like this. So this is 0. This is r0. The standard model lives here. Okay. Now, what lives here could be again the standard model. You can impose periodic boundary conditions or something else. Okay. And that, depending on what you do, that determines the boundary conditions and how you solve for the modes of the problem. So all the standard model fields, gauge interactions, Higgs, everything lives here. Okay? Gravity, of course, can see everything. So that's why we have to write a metric like this. Okay? Now, in order to get, we can derive from this, given that this is flat, we can derive the four-dimensional action the following way. So plus n gives you r0 to the n to g4. Okay. And we also have that the curvature, because the extra dimensions are flat, follow this relation. Now, when you plug everything in, when you make the substitution, the other thing to keep in mind that the volume element for the extra dimensions, this needs to be substituted d omega vn r to the n. Okay? So plugging everything in, you get the 4D effective action. Get minus m star n plus 2 omega n r to the n 4x square root to the 4 r to the 4. Okay. Now we can identify this guy as the Planck scale. So this tells you that the Planck scale is given by the, this is the cutoff of the theory, the gravitational cutoff of the theory, the x dimension theory, to r to the n. Okay? So what does this tell you? It tells you that if this is at the TEV, I have to make this large, and then I will make M Planck big. Mm-hmm. Okay? Now, we can do some math. So you can solve here for the size of the x dimensions as a function of the number of the x dimensions. R naught, let me put R naught here, just to keep the notation consistent. So the inverse size of the x dimension is given by roughly m star times m star over m Planck to the 2 over n. Okay? Now let's do some math. Let's do some numerics. So let's say n is equal to 1. The simplest thing we can do, just add one extra dimension. And we want, remember, in order to explain the hierarchy problem, we want m star to be at the TeV, also known as 10 to the 12 eV. Okay? So let's put n equals to 1, and let's get the number for r naught. So this is 10 to the 12 eV. So this guy here is m star over m Planck. So this is 10 to the 12 divided by 10 to the 28, roughly, squared. So 10 to the 12, this is 10 to the 16. So this is 10 to the 12 times 10 to the minus 32 eV. This is 10 to minus 20 eV. How big is that? If you convert it to seconds, it's like 10 to the 5 seconds inverse. Okay? We'll come back to this. Remember this number. So now, n equals 2. Can someone do the math quickly? How much is R naught inverse?
10 to the minus 4.
Yeah. 10 to minus 4 eV. This is roughly a millimeter. Okay? Now let's do one more. N equals 3. Okay? So this is 10 minus 16. 32 by 3 minus 11, roughly, this is 10 eV, okay? And this is roughly a micron, a fraction of a micron, okay? So question, are these values allowed? And how would you probe this?
First one is too low, right?
Why? Would this imply? So what changes if I had for gravity, if I had instead of 4, 5, extra dimensions. What is the first thing that changes?
Well, I get modes, right, going into the...
Yeah, but more think Newton. Like, don't, yeah, that's the...
Leak out, right?
Yeah, so then, yes, so what does that imply for Newton's law, for example?
It's going to get corrections.
Yeah, but, yeah, carry on.
The Green's function depends on the dimension, right?
Yeah, okay, carry on.
It gets weaker.
Yeah, but carry on. What do you expect to happen? How does, yeah, okay.
Newton's law right now.
Yeah, what is Newton's law right now? Yeah.
What is Newton's law? Like...
In four dimensions, what is... Yeah, inverse square, yeah. So then what does it, what do you expect it to happen if I have extra dimensions?
Like inverse cube law or
something? Yeah, if you have one, right?
Yes.
So that means that in general, so in 4D, we know that the force between two masses, okay, is equal to m1, m2, g Newton, which is 1 over m Planck squared, times r squared, okay? If I go to 5D, what do you expect to happen?
I guess it depends how big the dimension is, right? If it's like a...
Yeah, let's say that...
Dimension, it's like...
Yeah, let's... Exactly. Okay. So if it's non-compact, and then this should go like 1 over... Okay, the cutoff cubed. Now, if I go to 6 dimensions,
Nina, you said a cube, but you write a 5.
No, where do I write a 5?
On m star.
It's m star cubed. This is 3.
Okay.
Sorry. Guys?
It's into the 4 or something. Yeah,
well, not them. Yeah, so carry on. What do I expect to change?
G Newton is going to like...
Yeah, but what else? What is the R dependence here? Guys, to see it!
R to the
4, okay. M1, M2, and then M star to the 4. So then, what is the general formula for the force in 4 plus n? What power here? What power here?
R2 plus n?
Mm-hmm. Right? So basically, I mean, you can derive this also from Gauss's law. If you think about masses as charges, then the force goes like 1 over, this is the surface element in extra dimensions, right? So what happens now if I take two masses and I bring them to distances closer than are not? What do you expect the Newton's law to do? Do you expect it to be this?
I guess then it will seem as if there is a large dimension, right?
Exactly. So that means that if I go to distances smaller than the size of the extra dimension, I should see the full... if I were to do a gravity experiment, I should expect to see the full size of the extra dimension. So, clearly, this guy is not allowed because this is like 100 AU. So this is bigger than the size of the solar system. So we would have a bit of a problem. In fact, it's very interesting. So if you take circular orbits in gravity, in any 1 over r to the n force potential, you will see that you will only get stable circular orbits when n is less or equal to 2. So funnily enough, if we were to go to to five dimensions, that means four spatial dimensions, we wouldn't have circular stable orbits, which is kind of neat. So now, question, is this allowed? Is this allowed? Yeah, this is clearly not allowed because, I mean, we see the solar system.
So n is equal to 1 is too large, and n is more than 2 is unstable. That's what you said.
No. I'm saying a general fact. We don't have orbits. I mean, so the point is this is excluded because the solar system, yeah. So the question is, are these allowed? What would be your guess?
I guess by now the millimeter one is dead, right? Because I heard that someone is probing like 10 microns.
Exactly, that's the thing. So what you do is you take two masses and bring them close and see how it behaves. So what you would see is a transition from the 1 over r squared law to this high, to the r to the 2 plus n, okay? Now this transition happens when you hit the size of the extra dimension. As you correctly said, now the bound is 10 microns. But back then, when they first proposed the large extra dimensions, if you were to bring two masses close to 10 centimeters, you wouldn't know if gravity worked or not. This is really macroscopic in reality, right? Which is really cool. Gravity is so weak that, so back then, you need to do very precision experiments to even know that Newton's law works down to that small distance. I mean, millimeter is still macroscopic, or even micron is macroscopic. So this change is what explains this hierarchy. Now, you see it here, too. The other thing, the existence of the extra dimensions weakens gravity effectively. So you see, even though the true cutoff of the theory is m star, because the gravity sees all the extra dimensions, it makes it weaker. So this is not allowed because of the solar system.
Weakening means like Planck scale is getting larger and larger.
Exactly. So if you want to take gravity to zero, you take m Planck to infinity, right? So when you want to decouple gravity. So you see, the bigger the volume of the extra dimension, the bigger M Planck becomes for a fixed cutoff of the theory. And that happens exactly because while the standard model feels you can build models where they're confined on the brain, gravity has to see everything. Okay? So this is kind of excluded. I mean, if you plug everything, this is close to exclusion. And this is still okay. And there are still experiments that people do. There is Adelberger in Seattle who does these experiments. And he's the guy that has the 10 micron. I think, yeah, it's 10 micron now. So that's the first significant test and signature of these guys, of these theories. Now, other tests. And these come from many sources. Now, there is another thing that happens because when I go to high energies, I see the full metric. Now, if I were to write let's assume now for a second, let's go to distances much smaller than the compactification scale. So everything is higher dimensional. So if I were to write, let's try to look for the Schwarzschild solution. So we know that in 4D, we have a metric that looks like this. Minus 1. Okay. So we have this. So this is in 4D. So what does this term needs to be substituted by? By the same reasoning for the force. So 1 minus G Newton over R needs to go to what?
So it's going to be some other harmony, so I guess.
Yeah.
It's going to be the same, I guess.
Yeah, we just remove one power of R, right? So this becomes M star, M plus 2, R to the 1 plus N. Okay? So if we want to see what the horizon size of a black hole in the x dimension is for a Schwarzschild black hole, we would find that the size of the horizon goes like M star to the 1 over 1 plus N, okay, times 1 over M star. Okay, so if you make this, so you see here that the size of a black hole now is related to the inverse TV scale. So when you do that, you see that if I, given that the cutoff of the theory, in other words, is TeV, if I take things and I collide them with TeV energies, and they're within an inverse TeV from each other, they will form a black hole. So, and the production cross-section goes like the size of the horizon squared. So this means in these theories, this is another smoking gun. This is how you get black holes at the LHC. Okay? And a lot of the work that was done back then when the theory was first proposed is actually do the proper calculations for both black hole production and for the how they decay. Okay, because now the theory is extra-dimensional. So when you go to energies larger than the inverse size of the dimension, automatically your theory becomes higher dimensional. So the evaporation of the black hole is different, and where you have control of the theory is different. So when they calculate production cross-section of the black hole, you have to be at the semi-classical regime. You have to have a black hole that's slightly higher in mass than the exact effective M Planck of the extra dimensions, okay? So, and the point is that because they have now their evaporation temperature is also of order TeV, everything happens very fast. So these guys decay very quickly inside the detector. And they produce a lot of things. They decay to standard model degrees of freedom, but they also decay to gravitons that go in the extra dimensions. So you have, again, the usual jets plus standard model particles plus missing energy is the signature of these things. But because you have high multiplicity of events, the signature looks very different from what SUSY would look like.
Could you repeat the argument why it decays fast again?
Because the size, so the temperature is set by the size. Okay?
Okay. Temperature
is the inverse of the size. Yeah, roughly, right? So it's also TeV. So the mass is also of order TeV. So everything is comparable. So the rate of evaporation, these are hot. The smaller a black hole is, the hotter it is. So these are they are not far from what the effective M Planck is in mass. Okay? That's the key point. So they evaporate very fast. So it's not, so they've calculated, it's actually impossible to create something that's stable at collider scales. Yes?
So the effective M Planck is like 1 TeV, right?
Yeah.
But how do I then have computational control?
So this is what I was saying before. So they can only have computational control when the mass of the black hole you produce is slightly higher than the cutoff. It's the same reason why we have computational control in black holes in the universe, in our universe, right? So their size is much bigger than 1 over M Planck. So the moment you are in that regime, you're in the semi-classical regime. So things, this is, it's kind of funny. Gravity also becomes weaker above the, you still cannot compute things when everything becomes really comparable. And in fact, a lot of the literature from the time is exactly dealing with the production cross-section of these guys and the decay modes of these guys, because these both are important. So they don't have good control, but they still, I mean, it has to be geometric in the semi-classical regime, the cross-section, production cross-section.
So it should be like order of magnitude heavier than the OTV?
Yeah, it's like order of magnitude. A few times is enough. Okay. So you, when do you see, if you look at, if you go to the LHC webpage and look at the cutoff is like 4 TeV, but the mass of the black hole they look for is like 8 TeV. So just to have better control. But it's still, it's not a very accurate science. Okay? Yeah.
So I have a question. Why matter doesn't enter the bulk? What's the mechanism?
By construction. So, okay, good. So one of the great... So this good takes you, this is another rabbit hole, it's a good question. So back in the 90s, one of the reasons that they allowed, so they found, they studied deep brains and how you can localize fields on deep brains. So there is an entire industry coming out of the string theory that tells you how you can localize fields. In principle, they don't have to, it's an excellent question. And I'll come back to towards the end of this and revisit it, because it allows, it's a new tool, it's a new arena. In the end, so here you cannot have, so in this scenario where the things are flat and you still want to explain the TV scale, you cannot have the standard model particles in the bulk, because you will actually dilute everything. You will dilute E and M. Everything will be too weak.
Yeah.
That's the reason. So, but in principle, if you had other geometries, if the bulk was not flat, and I will discuss a model where that happens, then you could have the standard model fields in the bulk, and that allows all sorts of interesting things to happen. Okay? So, but the first, the simplest idea was, okay, it's confined in the bulk by phenomenology, because otherwise you couldn't have E and M be strong.
And in this other geometries, gravity is getting weaker, but the standard model is not?
You'll see. Okay, because let's finish this,
okay,
and then we'll come back to, it's a good question. You'll see how things change, and allowed, people basically revisited everything that they had done, flavor, guts, in the context of extra dimensions and having finite geometry. So you'll see, and then things came full circle with this program, okay? So now, one of the main signatures, black holes at the LHC, and people look for this, of course, they haven't found them. So again, this solution starts looking a lot like the meeting Susie's fate. Another thing that can happen is you can just produce gravitons, as you said before, you just produce modes that go in the extra dimension, and just you see missing energy, okay? So in that case, one of the things that people look for, so you have two protons coming in, they interact, and then you have gravitons evaporating, extra dimensional gravitons evaporating in the extra dimension. Now, in the LHC, you cannot see, you won't know if protons collided and went to nothing, you won't tag on it. So usually what they have is a gluon here being emitted. So you have a jet, for example. So one of the sets is that they look for is monojet, where they use the jet as a tag to know that something has happened, plus missing energy. Okay? So this also gives a constraint. Both of these searches are roughly comparable, tell you that the cutoff of the theory can no longer be TeV, but it has to be in the multi-TeV range. Okay? So, oh wow, this is still from last time. Wow. Okay, so there is, now because these Okay, how do these modes look like? And this is something that I went over too quickly. So if the extra dimension is flat, the KK modes of the gravitons are like particles in a box. So when you look for the wave functions, they look like plane waves in the extra dimension. And their mass splitting is roughly 1 over r, which is much, much smaller than m star. So beyond looking for just when you try to calculate how much missing energy you have, for example, it's actually very convenient to treat these modes as a continuum instead of just summing up individual modes. So what people calculate is the differential cross-section for production which goes like the mass of the mode, the n minus 1, m star to the n plus 2. Okay? And this is how T is the now I forget what I have in my notes. T is also the energy that the event has, okay? So this is the differential contribution of each mode to the total production cross-section. So if I want to integrate, I need to integrate over energy, depending on how I do my binning, and the mass of the mode, okay? So this is something that beyond the LHC, these guys have, it's not the only place where we had high energy event. So there are other environments where you can have high energy events. That includes stars. And of course, that includes cosmology, because we know that in the early universe, the universe was much hotter than it is today. So we expect that first, cosmology should be sensitive to the presence of extra dimensions. And how would it be sensitive? So we know that the standard picture of cosmology tells you that the rate of change of the temperature is absolute, is set by Hubble, which is the temperature in a radiation-dominated era over M Planck. This is the picture of adiabatic cooling that we have from the standard picture of cosmology. Now, if you have these extra dimensions, it means particles can collide and evaporate, and energy can leak into the extra dimensions. So you have another source, what is essentially evaporative cooling in the extra dimension. So when you have extra dimensions, it tells you that the rate of cooling goes like T to the n plus 3 over m star to the n plus 2 due to production of these modes in the bulk. So the requirement is that this rate is much smaller than this rate. And in fact, one of the characteristics, due to this simple fact, it tells you that depending on the number of the extra dimension, and they put up to 6, because they limit usually to 6, because in string theory you can have up to 10 to make, just by string theory limitations. So it tells you that you cannot have the universe hotter than a temperature to star that's roughly 20 MeV. And I think this goes up to here, is like a few GeV. So the universe has to be created cold, otherwise it wouldn't have the picture that we see today. Okay. Now, let's see. So a similar thing happens from stars. So stars, for example, in supernova, the temperature gets really high. So you can produce a lot of these guys. So the fact that stars are still around, or the sun is still around, constrains these extra dimensions and plays similar constraints. Again, nothing has been observed. So so this is where we're at. Yeah.
Sorry, could you repeat this argument? So so what we concluded from here is that, like you said, universe should be created cold?
Yeah, relatively cold. The reheat temperature has to be relatively low. Otherwise, you would have enough energy in there to produce these guys, and you would see the universe. So we have, actually, we know the CMB is there. I mean, are you guys taking Kendrick's class? Oh, okay, great. So we have knowledge about the universe going back to roughly a second. This is the time where Big Bang nucleosynthesis happened. So this is the time where the proton to neutron ratio got fixed. So the hydrogen to helium ratio fixed. So we can measure in primordial gases at the CMB, we can measure the abundances of these elements, giving us precision information about the rate of expansion of the universe at a time where these things happened. Deuterium is another probe. Lithium is another probe. So in fact, the CMB that happened at around 400,000 years for in the age of the universe is not the first information that we have about it. We know that the Lambda CDM, the Standard Model of Cosmology, works actually pretty well down to a time where the universe was roughly a fraction of a second old. And as you can imagine, those are temperatures that are roughly an MeV if you convert this. So this is where all these scales come from. Does that answer your question? But now you see that at the time, now another place where the temperature of order MeV is in the heart of a supernova. Also stars get really hot, not necessarily at an MeV scale, but they have thermonuclear processes happening and they live for a long time. So requiring that the sun is still around actually constrains, and this is something that Jun Wu will speak about a lot in the coming lectures. It's a very powerful proto of all of these things, which is pretty remarkable if you think about it. So these are the rates of all these processes in stars or supernova, in the stars in particular, they're really slow. But because the stars are old, it tells you that there is the, and we understand a lot about how stars work because we have one that we have studied for quite a bit of time, okay? So it's a very powerful probe of all these theories beyond the Standard Model, not just these theories of extra dimensions, but as you will see from Jun Wu's lectures, many of the things that we try to add to the Standard Model are constrained by cosmology and astrophysics and all the knowledge that we have acquired over the years. Now, so these are roughly the tools. So people, the first thing people did, assume the equations, the extra dimensions are flat, and then see what happens. So you got constraints from Newton's law, you got constraints from astrophysics and cosmology, you got constraints from Large Hadron Collider. Now, the next natural question people asked is, okay, can we make the extra dimensions not flat? There is no reason why they're flat. Yeah? What were you smiling?
No, I just remember hearing somewhere there's a no-go theorem that one cannot compactify 11D MTD on a how much torus? 6 torus or something, 5 torus, something. So
yeah.
2-4D. So we know it can't be flat.
Yeah, exactly. You can, exactly. But if you can make the part that is not flat so small that everything else looks flat, right? So it's not. So the most popular metric of that people wrote down is the following. So What does this remind you of? ADS. So you have, so here, they added warp in the extra dimension. So in the first version of it, so they said, OK, the standard model sits here. Oh, actually, this is the UV brain. This is the IR brain. And the UV brain is where y equals 0. So this factor is 1. And the IR brain is y equals y naught. OK? Now, you can do the same trick, similar tricks that we had before, taking into account the warping factor to see what the effective M Planck is here. And you find that M Planck minus e to the minus 2, I think. There's a factor of 2, yeah. 2k, why not? OK? Now, this factor, as we will see, is insignificant. So here, the size of the extra dimension, the cutoff, is not at the TV anymore, in principle, when you sit at the UV brain. So now you have to write actions for the bulk degrees of freedom. You have to write actions for the UV degrees of freedom, IR degrees of freedom. So the standard model, the first model that people wrote, they put the standard model in the IR brain. What does it mean? It means that the metric in the visible sector, or the standard model sector, is it has a warping factor. Okay? This warping factor, when you plug in the fields and plug in all of their kinetic terms and mass terms, even if you put them at the cutoff, you find that for the Higgs-Vev, for example, the effective Higgs-Vev that you observed is warped down by the UV. So now you can get exponential hierarchies between whatever. This guy can be at M3, which can be at the gut scale. So now you get exponential dependence on the warping down of the mass scales, even though this prefactor doesn't have to be very large. Before, you have the huge hierarchy between what the cutoff is and what the size of the extra dimension is. This is roughly a factor of 30 now. So the size of the extra dimension in absolute terms in these theories is really small. But it allows you to have exponentially small mass scales. OK? Now, these are the so-called, there was a paper, Sundrum, in 1997. So right after the paper from the large extra dimension paper was written, they said, OK, if we take the extra dimension to be a slice of ADS, I get this exponential hierarchy.
Wait, why decays from like here to here? So
the standard model is here. So basically, the cutoff of the theory here is whatever the cutoff. If you have a cutoff here, which is M3, the effective cutoff here, and you have to plug in the you can see it if you plug in the square root of the metric terms, you see that every mass scale is M3 times the warping factor on this brain. I'm going very quickly here. This is equivalent. So this is equivalent to actually, be, if you think about it in terms of ADS-CFT, it tells you that whatever sits in this IR brain is a composite sector. It's a CFT. So this is equivalent to actually having composite models that people wrote in the beginning of the 80s. So things came full circle. Now, so this is what is known as RS1. the first model. Now you can put the standard model here, in fact. That doesn't solve the hierarchy problem. But the interesting thing is you can take this IR brain to infinity. So you can have an infinite now extra dimension. But as you see from here, M Planck is still finite. It doesn't solve the hierarchy problem, but it was a funny toy model where you could have, in principle, an infinite extra dimension, but it still was allowed by experiment. Okay?
Effective Higgs doesn't get correct, right?
No, no, it doesn't, because the cutoff of the theory is this. Yes. It's composite. So because of ADS-CFT, it's like the Higgs is composite. And this is where people started playing games. Now, because the size of the extra dimension is small, you can start putting the standard model, pulling them from the brain, putting them in the bulk.
Okay.
So you can put in the gauge fields in the bulk, you can start putting fermions in the bulk. And people started playing games with the flavor hierarchy. So if you have the Higgs localized here and the fermions are in the bulk, if they are localized closer to the UV brain, they have an exponentially small coupling to the Higgs. And vice versa, if they're localized closer to the IR brain, they have a stronger coupling to the Higgs. So now you can explain the hierarchy of masses in the standard model by exponential localization in the bulk. People started playing other games. So people extended this game beyond solving the hierarchy problem. So people started playing with guts. So they said, okay, forget about the hierarchy problem for a second. Let's say I have supersymmetry at low energies, but let me make the size of the extra dimension 1/1 the gut scale. Then I can put SU5 in the bulk. I can have 3:1 on the brain and get solved the double, triplet, the Higgs problems that you have in breaking now are no longer problems. These were called before guts. So people took that game, so the phenomenology of these models came full circle. So they started from strongly coupled theories, compositeness, and they ended in compositeness, actually, in some ways. This is still compositeness. This is where we are now. Nothing has been seen. So these models have this exactly the same, whatever problems you had with the original compositeness models you have here. So the fact that we haven't seen any flavor, the fact that we haven't seen anything, is still there, but they're still beautiful, ideas. Now here, there is another thing. Here, dark matter is not the same. So the nice thing you were getting from Susie, that you had the lightest supersymmetric particle be the dark matter, this is not automatic here. Okay, you could impose some symmetries and have to have some of the KK mods be, but you need to add something else in the theory to naturally get a dark matter candidate out. So the WIMP doesn't fit well here, necessarily, the WIMP paradigm. Okay? And this is where we're at now, okay?
I guess people for years we're excited because what you said, because of millimeter, right?
Yeah, that's why people are doing all of these experiments, and these are tabletop, right?
What was the string compactification scale from '80s?
Oh, the string compactification scale was so these are large volume compactification. Usually, people were putting the string. So if you look at string phenomenology to have concrete models, these are what are called large volume compactifications. So usually they assume that the string scale is close to the Planck scale, like 10 to the 17 GeV or something like that. But it doesn't have to be, right?
So basically, compactification of this is much, much, much.
This is what is known as large volume compactification. So this is usually much larger than what people thought about. It's perfectly fine. You have to find a way to stabilize the moduli in a different scale now. But you don't have to have all of them, right? You can have an asymmetric compactification. You can have many of the dimensions being small with funny geometries, and then there's just one or two, at least two that you need to make the, yeah?
So because this extra dimension is large, like people are like able to avoid stringy effects because I get no winding.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. Some of them, you can avoid some stringy effects, but still the cutoff is at the TEV. So if you were to go, you should see some of these effects. You would produce black holes. So you should see some, in principle, some stringy effects. If string theory is the UV completion, you should see some stringy effects at the LHC for sure.
Because the black hole is heavier, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the black hole is heavier because that's what you have to do to be able to calculate. Mm. But they just don't know how to calculate. But in principle, you should see other funny things happening. And for me, in all honesty, that would be the most exciting scenario because you would really can study quantum gravity now at the collider, which would be really cool, but nature has other plans, apparently. So yeah, thank you. And this is where we are at now with the hierarchy problem, and this is what was en vogue till the LHC turned on, basically. from Wednesday you will hear things about other stuff that are more closer to what the field does now, focuses on now, given the reality of the Large Hadron Collider. Could still be true. You could still have some small tuning, and there are several people, and then there is a chance that the collider finds something, but... It's harder to argue. Yeah?
So basically the idea is that like when I first turn on the LHC, I will be at such energies that I can like neglect the string effects, and then when I wait another 5 years, I will be at 10 TeV where this...
There are regimes that you can calculate. So the goal was that actually the LHC would be probing the string effects. That those we cannot calculate. We don't know what the compactivity, we don't know the details of those. So all the calculations people have done is in a regime where they could calculate. Does that make sense? Because if you cannot calculate, you don't know how to constrain something, right? So if you want to have quantitative, and overall, the signature should be roughly similar. You have multiplicated many events and a lot of missing energy. So even when you look at even the events that you don't know how to calculate, you just cannot use them to constrain anything. But the morphology should be similar. And I'm not sure if people have looked at it in detail. That's my understanding. If you want, I mean, there are papers, I mean, there are several papers from the time. The original paper of large extra dimensions was Arkani Hamed, Dvali and Dimopoulos, and these are from 96, 97. Randall Sudum came afterwards. They said, okay, what if the extra dimension was flat? And came around the same time with ADS-CFT. So it was a nice coincidence. And then people spent a lot of time trying to get the proper cross-section for black holes. That was very hard. And also get the evaporation right. That was another problem. But there is a lot of literature at the time that deals with all these questions that you're asking me that I don't know how to answer properly.
I'm just confused because I don't really see the strings, right? I see like usual like KK sort of logic, but I don't see like all the stringy effects.
No, you don't necessarily have to have, and it's not, you will see the KK modes for sure. But whether or not you see stringy effects, how you will see them depends on what, as you said, you may have some mess that's compactified, and then one dimension is large. Okay, guys.
So this M star is then like the 11-dimensional M Planck or something, or?
Yes.
Okay, I see.
Yeah, so. Yeah, that's the true cutoff of the theory. Mm-hmm. Anyway, thank you, guys.